This is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. Later this hour, we're joined by Emmy Award-winning composer and flutist Southwest Florida's own Cat Epple to get some insight into the music that would have been played during the time of the Colusa Indians on instruments described in historic written accounts of the now long-extinct tribe. But first, we're traveling a bit less far back in time, about a half a century ago, to explore Florida's soul music history and heritage. When most people think of where the roots of soul music lie, they likely name cities like Memphis, Detroit, or New Orleans. But the state of Florida also has a rich soul music history. We're joined today by John Capuglia. He is the author of Florida Soul, From Ray Charles to the KC and the Sunshine Band, and associate professor of journalism at the University of Tampa. He joins us ahead of his presentation tomorrow evening at 6 o'clock at the Edison and Ford Winter Estates in Fort Myers on Florida's soul music heritage. He joins us from the studios of iHeartMedia in Tampa. John Capuglia, welcome to Gulf Coast Live.
Hi, thanks a lot for having me.
And this show is pre-recorded, so we're not taking any calls, but we always invite our listeners to get in on the conversation, and you can do so via social media. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media, and on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. So tell me about this. You're a professor of journalism, but then you got the idea for a book about soul music. How'd that happen?
Well, I've written other books, but, you know, it's not such a stretch. I mean, this book is based on reporting and interviewing with people who survived, who made this music, people who knew them. So, you know, it's nonfiction. I tell the stories in a series of 20 profiles in chronological order, starting with Ray Charles and all the way up through KC and the Sunshine Band, of 20 different musicians, singers, and producers who turned out this great music that, as you say, it turns out, surprisingly to most people, adds up to a really important and overlooked cultural heritage.
It is quite the portfolio coming from a state that people typically don't turn to immediately. Are you a big soul music fan in general?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I grew up listening to and loving that music, and I still listen to it, and I actually listen to it a lot on a public radio station in Newark, New Jersey, which plays a lot of great soul music. So I listened to it on the internet. And, you know, doing this book just kind of rekindled my passion for this music, and meeting the people who made it, or many of them, the people who survived, you know, it's pretty exciting for me.
It's really cool. It's kind of like a journalist gets to really dig deep on a subject that they really like instead of the daily assignment. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, excellent.
So how did you do the research for this book? I mean, you said that you did a lot of interviews. Were you able to, I mean, of course, listen to a lot of music? Were there articles written about it? What kind of things were you able to find?
You know, not that much. I mean, there was some publicity about the individual artists, but part of the reason I think that the publisher, the University Press of Florida, decided to commission the book was this is kind of an unknown topic. You know, there was nothing that about, you know, in the aggregate, Florida as a soul music capital. Of course, there were stories about Ray Charles and books and other individual artists, but it was basically, it was spurred by my discovery when I moved down here from New York to teach at the University of Tampa. You know, to be honest, at the very beginning, I didn't even know Ray Charles was from Florida, which I'm kind of embarrassed to admit, but I just heard him sing Georgia on my mind so convincingly that I thought he was Georgian. I listened to Sam and Dave my whole life. I had no idea, because they recorded in Memphis for Stax Records, but I found out they met in Miami. They formed their duo in Miami. They made their first recordings in Miami, and they had their first success in Miami, so much so that they were invited to go record for Stax. And I interview Sam Moore in the book, who's 80-something and still performing. It sounds great. Probably one of the biggest discoveries, most surprising to me, was people my age or older will probably remember The Twist, which was got to be the biggest song and dance craze of my lifetime.
Well, I think Chubby Checker.
Exactly. But did you know that The Twist was actually written by Hank Ballard of Hank Ballard and the Midnighters, based on him seeing teenagers on Central Avenue in Tampa doing The Twist? And he asked them, what is this? And they said, it's a little thing we made up, and we call it The Twist. So he wrote the song, he recorded it, and it was a minor hit for him on the R&B sales chart. So this is when still music was pretty segregated between black music and the Hot 100 or pop charts. Dick Clark, who had the TV show American Bandstand, heard the song and basically hired and created and named Chubby Checker to re-record it. He put him on American Bandstand, and the rest is history, or as I call it, twistery.
Yeah, twisted history. You're not kidding. So, Ray Charles, I got to admit, I didn't know that he grew up in Florida either. What part of Florida did he grow up in?
A little town called Greenville in the north. And, you know, he went blind here. He attended the St. Augustine School for the Deaf and Blind, which, very importantly, he learned how to read music in Braille. Then he left that school at 16 and started being a professional musician on his own. His mother had died. And he performed with bands in Jacksonville and Orlando and then Tampa. And I couldn't interview Ray Charles, obviously. He's deceased. But I found musicians in Tampa who are in their 80s and 90s who worked with him in the mid-40s. And they told the stories about him as a friend and him as a musician.
I can't imagine being in the 1940s, blind, African-American musician in that era. Did the people that you interviewed talk much about his personality or his reactions to the way that people, you know, welcomed him or did not welcome him? Did you get those kinds of stories?
Yeah, absolutely. What they all stress is he was a completely independent to the point of being an ornery guy. You know, he refused to use a cane. He refused a guide dog that was offered to him. And he said he never even picked up a guitar because he associated it with these old blues men who went by, you know, Blind Willie McTell, blind this, blind that. He's like, I don't want to be that guy. So he would find his way around these cities to the venues where he was playing and they were practicing. And he would have someone guide him once to that place. And then he would remember and he would walk by himself. And one of the musicians I talked to said he ran into him on the street on their way to rehearse with the Manzi Harris Orchestra. And he told my guy, Ernie Calhoun, listen, get out of my way. You're holding me up. I got to get to practice. So he was an amazing guy.
That's really incredible story. He went blind as a child?
Yeah, very young. It was probably something, either glaucoma or something like it, that unfortunately just went untreated. You know, there wasn't good medical care. It was a very poor little town. You know, his mother was a single mother. You know, they had a really tough time. Interestingly, you know, on the racial front, obviously this is completely during the era of segregation. Ray Charles actually even played in a country music band called the Florida Playboys in Tampa, and he was the only black member of the band, and he played to completely white audiences. And later in his career, he put out two albums of country music that were very successful.
Yeah, I never even thought about it, though. I'm thinking about a blind person's take on race. If they were blind from such a young age, it'd be a whole other perspective.
So he said, for example, at this school that he went to in St. Augustine, they segregated the blind and deaf black kids from the blind and deaf white kids. And he writes in his book, he's like, as if we could tell. We didn't even know who was white or black, and they still kept us separate.
Well, let's listen to one of his songs that you've selected for the show today. This is Ray Charles doing I Got a Woman.
Well, I got a woman way over town that's good to me. Oh, yeah. Say, I got a woman way over town, good to me. Oh, yeah. She give me money when I'm in need. Yeah, she's a kind of I got a woman way over town that's good to me. Oh, yeah, she says a loving early in the morning just for me. Oh, yeah, she says a loving early in the morning just for me. Oh, yeah. I got a woman way over town that's good to me. Oh, yeah.
and nine. Never grumbles or fusses, always treats me right. Never running in the streets and leaving me alone. She knows a woman's place is right there now in her home. I got a woman way over town that's good to me. Oh, yeah. Say, I got a woman way over town that's good to me. Oh, yeah. Oh, she's my baby. Don't you understand? Don't you know she's all right? I don't you know she's all right? She's all right, she's all right. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's hard not to bop around in the chair in the studio here, so I just kind of embarrassed myself with the person on the board just like looking at me like, what are you doing? Have you ever been to the childhood home up in Greenville of his?
Yes, yeah, absolutely. And they've preserved it. It's not open right now to tour, but you could see, you know, it's very small. It's a humble place. And I took a picture of it. not one of my great artistic successes, but, you know, it's in the book. it's still there. You know, Ray Charles, if anybody created or invented soul music, it was probably him. And in the song that we just heard, there's one aspect of him inventing it that actually was a little controversial in that, you know, soul music is basically gospel-inspired vocals over blues and jazz underpinnings. And one of the things that Ray Charles did that was very successful is he took gospel tunes and he converted them just by tweaking the lyrics a little bit into secular or popular songs. Like the one that we just heard, I Got a Woman. It was I Got a Savior. And there's another song you may remember, Hallelujah, I Just Love Her So. That was Hallelujah, I Just Love Him So, meaning the Lord. So some of the church folks weren't happy with him, and he took a lot of grief as a result. But in the end, his music was so good, and he was so successful that they left him alone.
That is incredibly interesting. If you're just joining the show today, I'm talking with John Capuglia. He is a professor of journalism at the University of Tampa and author of the book Florida Soul, From Ray Charles to KC and the Sunshine Band. We're getting a bit of a preview of his presentation tomorrow night at the Edison and Ford Estates in Fort Myers. If you'd like to chime in via social media, we are on Facebook at WGCU Public Media or on Twitter at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. So who else did you come across who had deep roots here in Florida?
Mm-hmm. Well, besides Ray Charles, Sam and Dave and the Twist, there was another famous duo called James and Bobby Purify. And they had a big hit with a song called I'm Your Puppet. And they're from Pensacola. There's a guy who goes by Lattimore, who had a big hit in the 70s. Many of them, but his most famous song was Let's Straighten It Out. Betty Wright, who broke into a number one pop hit with The Cleanup Woman, and she was 17 years old. She's from Miami. There's another woman who, all of these people are chapters in the book. Linda Lindell had a song that you may remember the refrain. It's What a Man. Uh-huh. And it goes, What a Man, What a Man, What a Mighty Good Man.
Yeah, they got redone.
She's from outside of Gainesville. yeah. And all the way up to KC and the Sunshine Band. You know, when I was listening to them, you know, long ago, I never really thought, well, what does the sunshine, you know, refer to? But it's Miami, the Sunshine State. So I interviewed KC, who actually his real name is Harry Wayne KC. And he actually told me, and I deal with this in the chapter on him, that they originally started out trying to be a junkanoo band. And most people never heard of it, including me. It's a Bahamian music that they play at a junkanoo festival every year down there. And there's a big Bahamian community in Miami, and it involves a lot of percussion, a lot of whistles, and a lot of horns. And that's how KC and his partners derived their sound, which, you know, has been incredibly successful. And like Sam and Dave and Ray Charles, we are still listening to this music 50 years later.
Yeah, I do love them. They're pretty good. I'm wondering, do you have any stories of soul music out of Southwest Florida, down here in the Fort Myers, Naples area, probably Fort Myers? We have a building here in Fort Myers called McCollum Hall, and it was in the Dunbar community. It was pretty much the only place that African-American musicians could play between Miami and Tampa, including the likes of Duke Ellington, Ella Fitzgerald, Louis Armstrong. Did that ever come up in any of your research?
I didn't, but, it's a big state.
Yeah,
sure.
No kidding.
There's a lot I missed that a lot I just couldn't fit in.
No, yeah, it's a long state. Anybody that's driven it knows it. Mm-hmm. I wanted to talk a little bit more about Sam and David. Tell me about them.
Mm-hmm. Well, Sam Moore grew up in Overtown, which is, the black neighborhood in Miami. And actually, Betty Wright, who was a very successful singer, grew up across the street from him. He started out singing in the black church, like almost all soul singers did. And he was the MC at a club in Miami called the King of Hearts. And this guy who's actually from Georgia, Dave Prater, came and tried to win an amateur talent contest. And that's where Sam met Dave, and they formed their duo. And an interesting thing I didn't understand about Sam and their music when I sat down with him at his house, I spent a lot of time with him. He said, we actually did not sing harmony like most groups or duos do. What he and Dave did was more like the call and response. One would say something, a woman would sing a response. He said, and we got that right out of the black church.
Huh. Well, let's listen to a song from them, Sam and Dave. This is the song called Hold On, I'm Coming. Mm-hmm. That was Hold On, I'm Coming by Sam and Dave. And I feel like a DJ now, announcing the name of a song afterwards. How well did that song do at the very beginning? Or did it come on the strong a little bit later?
No, it was one of their biggest hits. I think Soul Band was the biggest, I believe, in 1965. This was also a huge hit. And this was also a time at which black music crossed over, which before that had been pretty segregated like society. As I said, there was a rhythm and blues chart and there was a pop music chart, but soul music became basically the sound that everybody, especially young people, white and black, we're listening to. And actually, I talk a little bit about the civil rights movement in my book and the relationship with soul music. And I found a quote from Dr. King in which he tells DJs at a conference that he credits them with making integration easier because the youth of America, white and black, were both listening to the same music and doing the same dances.
I'm wondering if there's something that's particular about Florida's culture, because we're not really the South, but we're certainly not the North. Is there something about that that influenced these musicians in a way that maybe cities like Memphis or Detroit did not?
Well, you know, our soul music does have some attributes that they don't have, particularly in the South, and maybe even a little south of you. There are Latin influences in the soul music there. For example, in Betty Wright's song, The Cleanup Woman, that I mentioned earlier, there's a rhythmic pattern that you see in salsa and other Latin music. There's also Caribbean influences down there. Like I mentioned that KC and the Sunshine Band wanted to be a Bahamian music band. Mm-hmm. So that sets it apart. But I think one reason why our cultural heritage hasn't been recognized here is just the sheer diversity of our soul music. James and Bobby Purify's song, I'm Your Puppet, is a very sweet pop type song. As Sam and Dave, as we just heard, hard driving soul. There's Latin influences. So it was very hard for people to say, this is the Florida soul sound. And, you know, in Motown, you recognize it. A lot of rhythm and blues from New Orleans, it's got a certain flavor, you know, that comes to mind. So I think the diversity of it is a strength, but I think it also hurt the recognition of Florida soul music.
Yeah, it's great that you put it all together, though, in one book, or as much as you could find. As you mentioned before, it is a big state. So we're running out of time, but I do want to get at least one more story with a song alongside it. You mentioned it earlier. It's the one that I also indicated had been covered a few times, What a Man by Linda Lindell. Tell me a little bit about this person and this song.
Thank you. Well, Linda grew up outside of Gainesville on a farm, and like almost every other soul singer, she grew up singing in the black church that was near her house. But unlike most soul singers, she's white. And she actually performed and made her name on the black chitlin circuit, which is a term that people use to refer to black entertainment venues in the black parts of town during segregation, where black performers performed for almost exclusively black audiences. Mm-hmm. But a gentleman named Lavelle Kama, who is also in the book, hired her because she was so talented. And he said, you know, she was quite an attraction. I mean, it was an oddity that actually brought people in to see her. And when they heard her, they really admired her and thought she was great. And so she did so well on that circuit that they asked her to come to Stax in Memphis and record her song, What a Man. Listeners may remember also that in the 90s, En Vogue and Salt and Pepper covered that song, and they had a big hit with it.
Yeah, I remember that very clearly. Let's listen to the original.
Do the change.
That is Linda Lidell with What a Man. And during that song, I had to look up a picture because you mentioned that she was white. And I was like, well, let me see what she, because this is, you get it every once in a while where there's a voice that you could not imagine what that person looks like. I mean, or you imagine, but then you see what they look like and they look completely different.
Right.
And that's definitely the case here.
Yeah. You know, so I just want to mention, you said you were bopping along there in the studio. When I do this presentation tomorrow at night at the Edison in Florida State, it's not going to be some reading where the author looks down at his book and drones the words that he wrote. I'm going to be playing the hits. There's going to be toe tapping, and I'm going to show images on screen of vintage pictures of rhythm and blues back in the day and contemporary portraits that I commissioned that are in the book. So, you know, my hope is that, I think it should be a pretty entertaining thing.
So were you able to speak with Linda Lindell?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, she's a chapter in the book. And actually, what she told me a funny story in that her song, the original, was just used in a Chase Bank commercial. And she's finally getting paid 50 years later. She didn't get anything for the recording. She never made any royalties, which is a little suspicious. But this Chase Bank commercial, which went nationwide, is finally paying off for her. So it's a happy ending.
Oh, finally. Well, it took a while, huh? How many people did you get to talk to in your book that are still alive? And there are 20 chapters, right?
Yes.
So out of 20, how many were you able to actually talk to because they're still around?
Oh, maybe 17. Yeah. I mean, in some ways, I chose the people who I could talk to and tell their stories more fully. So that had something to do with the selection, but So Ray Charles obviously had to do him. I mean, he's the godfather. So, yeah. So they're all based on in-person interviews. In one case, there's a gentleman who's deceased, but I interviewed his widow at length. So, I didn't feel like there was any lack of information.
Yeah, it's great. And I'm interested in hearing if you have another book coming out or another passion you're willing to journalistically follow to the point that you do write about. What's the next one?
No, I'm still riding the Florida Soul wave. You know, it's gone great. I won an award from the Florida Historical Society. The book was very favorably reviewed in the Wall Street Journal. So the news about Florida Soul got outside of this state. You know, they have a readership of 1 million people who now know that Florida Soul deserves to be on the cultural map. So, you know, I'm still enjoying this.
Yeah, it's time to take a break and just enjoy the music, right?
Yeah.
Well, that is all the time that we've got for this part of the show, but I want to thank you. John Capullo, it's been so great talking with you. The author of Florida Soul, From Ray Charles to Casey and the Sunshine Band, and associate professor of journalism at the University of Tampa. He joined us from the studios of iHeartMedia in Tampa. John Capullo, thanks so much for sharing these stories with us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
And if you'd like to see him live, he'll be giving a free lecture on Florida's soul music heritage tomorrow evening at 6 o'clock at the Edison and Ford Winter Estates in Fort Myers. You can go to our website, gulfcoastlive.org, to find out more about that. And when we return, we're joined in studio by award-winning composer and flutist Cat Epple to travel way back in time to the days of the Colusa Indians to learn about and hear some of the music that would have been played at that time. I'm Julie Glenn, and you're listening to Gulf Coast Live. Stay with us.